Today's video is sponsored by Bespoke Funding. If you're interested, there's a link in the description. Use code ALP10 to get yourself an account now and save yourself 10% across any challenge on their site.
Ben, how are we doing, mate?
Very well, thank you, mate. Thanks for having me on. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. It's nice to have you on, mate. I appreciate you jumping on a nice early morning on a Wednesday.
That's fine, it gets me out of the office.
That's it. So for the viewers at home that perhaps don't know you, just a little bit about yourself and the usual question that everyone gets asked, how did you get into trading in the first place?
Yeah, so the honest answer is I kind of fell into it. It was pure luck, right? So I'm 32 now. When I was like 19, 20, I was working in a gym. Really, really good. You get to meet loads of people. And that is literally kind of then how I ended up transitioning. So when I wanted to change my career, basically, because it's a fun job, but you don't earn much money, right? So I wanted to kind of get out of that industry. Didn't really know what I wanted to head into because I'd always been very sports orientated, like with golf, things like that. But one of my clients was in recruitment and worked in finance. So basically managed to get me an interview. Obviously, he managed to secure the role as an account manager, basically a small startup hedge fund. So Zeus Capital Wealth is what it was called. It was very kind of retail focused rather than you having to have millions, you know, liquid assets and all the rest of it. You could get in much lower. Barrier of entry basically was much lower. Obviously, I wasn't trading there. I didn't go in as a trader. Account manager is essentially a fancy way of saying customer service, right? You're dealing with the investors, you know, speaking with the traders, kind of playing that middleman and relations and stuff like that. But I just got hooked, basically. You know, seeing the traders there, don't get me wrong, some of them had nice watches on, things like that. It obviously sparked your interest a bit more. And it kind of just really snowballed from there. And I was just very lucky. So I first started trading FX. I do a lot of equities now, but I first started trading FX. And the reason for that is because the guy I used to sit with quite a lot of lunch and things like that gave me a lot of time, a guy called Ken, was on the FX desk. So it kind of was just the natural progression. It was my first bit of exposure into it, basically. So it all kind of went from there, snowballed from there. I then was there for a couple of years, then worked at the Institute of Trading and Portfolio Management with Anton Krill. That was, again, a great experience. Obviously, all throughout this journey, don't get me wrong, still making a ton of mistakes. But it was just that journey there, that exposure to the professionals, basically, which... I know I'm incredibly lucky, you know, for we've spoken about this before, the social media side of things and stuff like that can be a nightmare to try and navigate nowadays in actual learning. But yeah, it was just very, very fortunate. It's kind of just snowballed from there. And now I'm sitting here, you know, heading up a trading floor in Mayfair. And yeah, it's been a bit of a wild journey, really. An unusual one anyway.
Yeah, incredible stuff. Like you say, you know, it's something that I guess a lot of people at home probably can't quite fathom, the journey. And would you say that obviously finding your way into that journey, and like you say, you mentioned being around some of the professionals and obviously Anton Krill, how did that kind of shape and mold your perspective of trading? Because we've, you know, as we've spoken on the way here, social media is kind of fooling a lot of people, right? You were, as you say, lucky enough, but also at the same time, perhaps, you know, fortunate to find your way into that and clearly deserving of that. Did your perspective from early on be very different to what's kind of shown and portrayed online nowadays? Did you find that?
Yeah, massively. I think the difference with it is that the professional side of things, it's all... We're here to make money, right? It's as simple as that. They're not sitting there about fancy cars, this, that, and everything. They've got nice stuff because they're earning good money. Whereas social media, they kind of, it's the other way around, right? It's a case of look at this, look what I've got. You should believe I know how to trade. The bottom line is there's a million different ways to trade. You can be on a trading floor. I mean, you think of it this way, HSBC, JP Morgan, they have these massive buildings in Canary Wharf, thousands of staff. You think they all trade the same way? Yeah. You think they're all sitting there, these guys only doing fundamentals, these guys only doing technicals. Like, there's so many different ways of doing things. And the bottom line is as long as you make them money and it's done in a risk-managed way, they don't really care, right? So I think the difference is a lot of the stuff you see online nowadays, they're trying to say, like, this way is the best way. You know, smart money concepts are best, or this way is best, or this way is best. You should do this. This guy don't know what he's talking about. The bottom line is, don't give a shit. As long as you make money and you're doing it in a sensible way, it really doesn't matter. So I think just the attitude and the approach to it just tends to be very different on the professional and the retail side, I find.
Yeah, I can attest to that because I was definitely misled when I got into this industry. You know, there's a lot of unfortunate woo-woo and rubbish online, which, you know, for someone like me who was in a poor financial position, I was just like, whoa, this is the way out. You know, this is how I'm going to do it. But obviously, it's really interesting that you say that. And that's why I'm really keen to dig into this sort of stuff, because I feel like there's so many people at home that are assuming trading is that, you know, get rich quick scheme, and they're gonna make a fortune overnight. And obviously, as you've attested, you know, 12 years trading, right?
Yes.
Yep. So obviously a long career in trading. How long was it before you actually started to earn from trading?
I would say it probably still took me about 3 or 4 years, in all honesty. Because look, even though I was surrounded by those people, I still done the typical thing of you get hooked, right? So you want to find more and more information. So what do? You turn to Google, you turn online, you start watching YouTube or whatever it might be that you can try and extract information from. The inevitable thing is you then do come across a whole bunch of BS along the way as well, right? So I've still made, you know, don't get me wrong, just because I started in those types of places, I've still fucked up. I've still made all the silly mistakes. I've still lost money, still done all that kind of stuff, right? So it still took me stumbling and tripping over my own feet a little bit. And basically, you know, we'd get told one thing, you still try something else. It's that human nature, right? You have to almost test it and kind of trip up sometimes and make a mistake before you really learn. So I still done all that kind of stuff. And I would say probably a good 3 or 4 years still before I developed real consistency. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd have little profitable patches. I'm sure a lot of people at home have probably done, you know, we've all been there, right?
Yeah.
You have a 2-3 month period. You think you've cracked it. I think a lot of guys struggle with that nowadays with the prop firms, for example. They have a good period. They pass, get a payout, lose their account, go through the cycle again because they're having these ups and downs. And just because something works for a small period of time doesn't mean it will then continue to work. And I think this is something that a lot of people need to obviously learn within their trading journey. Different conditions are going to give you different scenarios that you may not have come across before. So everyone has that up and down, and I definitely am no different to that. I definitely had those ups and downs as well.
No, I love that, and I love the honesty and transparency. And I think, a lot of people I speak to that have actually found true success, it doesn't happen overnight. And that's something that I've always tried to get across to people in all walks of life. It's not just trading, any business, right? It takes time. And I think, unfortunately, trading eludes people to think they can perhaps start a business. Say you started a clothing brand, and you buy a load of stock, and within a year, you're like, I'm going to make money. It's very unlikely, right? You might even not even be.
Most businesses fail in the first year.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas a lot of people in trading, they are misled. So obviously, you having that kind of root in certainly helped you.
Yes.
But getting in on some of the struggles and perhaps the battles, at that time in life, how were you kind of in your own life financially? Were you doing it from a state of, I need loads of money? Or had you come into this, and I'm assuming through the professional side, had you kind of realized it was more of a business early on?
To a certain extent, yes. Obviously, because I'm working at these places, I have a salary, right? So I put 500 quid, 1,000 pounds into an account, blow it up. It's not like, you know, that was my big, you know, one big go at it, right? So there is obviously both sides to it. And this is why I always say to people, well, look, don't rush to get out of your job, right? True trading doesn't require you sitting at a chart or a computer 12 hours a day. You're going to have, even if you're an intraday trader, select periods of the day where there's, you know, maybe London open, New York open, you know, increased volume, momentum, whatever it might be. If you're swing trading, longer term trading especially, you don't need to be sat there all the time. A big thing I always think, and what helped me, and I think would help others, is if you make sure you've still got other sources of income. You always hear that cheesy line of, you know, the average millionaire has 7 sources of income and all that anyway, right? So in my opinion, you should never rely on one source of income. It doesn't have to be 7, but you should never rely on one. But I think that then definitely helps because then it kind of smooths out those up and downs because yes, you might have just blown up a £1,000 account, but you're still getting paid that month. You're still getting that 2.5 grand check or whatever it is. Do you know what I mean? You're still getting paid that. And obviously, you know, at the beginning, I wasn't exactly getting paid much. I was literally on like 25 grand a year. So the motivation was definitely money orientated, like I say, seeing these guys obviously, you know, having big paychecks, doing very well for themselves. But the nature of the way that I am, I love that mental challenge. I always talk about the markets, they're almost like a big game of chess, right? And it's like you're trying to outsmart and outwit other people, but also survival as well. I think too many people look at it as we said, a bit of a get rich quick. Also, the other side of it, it's almost like it's just like this infinite piggy bank that's just going to pay you out monthly. You're going to make 10% a month and off you go. You're going to have big ups and downs and stuff like that. There has to be other ways of kind of backing yourself up and supporting yourself. And I think having other sources of income has definitely helped me. And I would imagine that would help other people as well with their journey.
I couldn't agree more. It's something that I myself, you know, I've always advocated for. And I tried the whole let's trade without income or, you know, try and put the money in an account and blow it up. And sometimes, you like you say, you'll have those periods where you're like, oh, I've took 500 quid to 5 grand. Babe, we've made it.
Yeah.
We have made it.
I've cracked it. Yeah. I'm off.
We're eating good tonight. And then, you know, next week it's like, can I quit my job yet, babe? I ain't got any money left. I can't pay the rent. We're on baked beans. You know, it very quickly changes.
Yeah, the highs and the lows, right?
Yeah. So I think that's why, you know, like you say, having a stable income and working on the craft, because I feel like a lot of the lessons I've learned, I've only learned through doing. Yes. And I'm sure you can attest to that yourself. One thing I wanted to get into as well here, it just come to mind, is on a trade floor as such, something I feel like a lot of people would take from at home is a lot of people, I feel like risk and the kind of fascination behind RR is thrown out there now, almost a little bit wild. I had a conversation with someone the other day, right? And he asked me, you know, what's a good percent a month? And I said, well, it all comes down to your capital at the beginning, because if you're undercapitalized, yes, 2-3% on a grand, not going to be a lot, right? No, however, yeah. 7-8 figures, it's going to be huge. Mm-hmm. So in terms of like trade floors as such, do they kind of have like targets or quotas they have to hit to be deemed good? Or is it a case of, like you say, let's just get paid?
So it's not a case of, right, we're targeting X amount of percent this year or this month. The first objective is always kind of measured against the benchmark. So it's relative to the market you trade. And let's use somebody like myself. Obviously, a lot of US equities nowadays predominantly is the majority of my portfolio. So I'll measure myself against the S&P, right? So if the S&P has only had, if the S&P was flat that year, but you've ended up 10% up, you've absolutely killed it. But another year, if the S&P was up 30% and you've made 10%, you've had a shocker, right? So yeah. It's relative. So you've got to obviously have some way of benchmarking yourself. So I would say, you know, that's the first thing. You're always looking at the conditions that you're in. But your first priority as a professional, especially if you're managing money for anybody else or anything like that, you've got to be protecting your downside. And it's just basic maths, right? If somebody loses 50%, we've got to make 100% just to get back to break even. A lot of people think making more money or having a higher return long term comes from the bigger upsides. Well, a lot of it comes down to reducing downside, right? I mean, we won't get too heavy into it, but if you look at multi-asset portfolios, for example, Ray Dalio is a classic example, the all-weather portfolio. A lot of the outperformance over the time has not come from having these massive up years, right? It's minimizing that drawdown. So if you're down only 10% rather than 50%, we've only got to make 11% to get back to break even or whatever now. So it's a lot easier to get back to the green and making money, right? So it's reducing that downside. So protecting your capital is the first objective. Managing your risk is always that priority. And then from there, measuring your performance against a relative, you know, a relative benchmark. It all depends on the market conditions. If the market is also down, let's imagine you're an equities trader, right? Or you're an investor, however you want to word it. And let's imagine the market crashes and it's down 40% that year. Well, if you're only down 10%, you've massively outperformed. And people seem to forget this, right? It's not just about making loads of money. Performance is relative. So you've always got to look at it in that way. And that's definitely something that we do. And I think it's something that a lot of retail people or, you know, anyone trading from home should definitely try and take that into consideration as well. And keep that in mind, I think.
Yeah, it makes sense because obviously, you know, we touched on prop firms briefly. And, you know, prop firms, while they're amazing, and I feel I probably wouldn't be in the position I'm in without them. Mm-hmm. So they are incredible, and I'm not trying to bash them in any way. But they have kind of created this unrealistic expectation that 8 to 10% a month is the industry standard or norm. And I can only imagine that if you, back all those years, were like, I'm going to make 8 to 10% a month, someone might have given you a backhand, right?
Yeah. Like, it wouldn't have been. You're mental? That's what the S&P does on a year on average.
Yeah. So in the professional game, that's not something that, it can be done, but it's not like you need to make 8 to 10% a month.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, let's use my own personal portfolio as an example, right? A lot of what I do, as we've touched on, is a lot of US equities, a lot of long-term positions, more medium to long-term. It's just suits my lifestyle and stuff anyway, better now. But then you look at my January, for example, I was up like 8.5% in January. Now, bearing in mind, this is an unleveraged portfolio as well, right? So I'm not leveraged to the eyeballs. I've not got this big volatile portfolio and I still made like 8% in January, right? That doesn't mean that it can't happen, especially if you're trading more aggressively, right? It's a little bit of leverage in there or whatever it might be. But I think what people have to remember is the structure, and a lot of people probably won't, you know, like this, but the reality is the prop fund industry with the online industry is set up for you to fail. Because if most people don't fail, their business collapses. Because a lot of these companies, they're obviously not going, oh yeah, you traded well for 4 weeks. Here's a real £200,000 account. It's a demo account. Now, yes, you do get paid out in real money if you obviously hit certain targets, but that's then coming out of their pocket. So therefore, they need X percent of people to fail, and you're then essentially getting paid out from their revenue. Now, granted, there are people that get consistent payouts and stuff. I'm not, you know, if it works for you, then that's fantastic. As we said earlier on, as long as you make money, that's the most important thing. But I think people have to get rid of this fairy tale that prop funds are going to change my life because I've only got £1,000 of my own money, right? The statistics are the statistics. Trading and investing is all a game of probabilities anyway, right? If you look at any kind of trade you would take in your portfolio, you only take that position with the probability and the odds in your favor, and then you risk manage it. It's a risk managed bet with the odds in your favor. That's essentially what it is at its core, right? But then you look at the prop firm statistics, and I think for a lot of them, it's less than 1% actually get any kind of consistent payouts. So what you're now trying to do is be part of less than 1% in a game that is all about making sure the odds are in your favor. That's very bad. That doesn't make any sense, right? Yeah. So I think people need to stop looking at them as this magical thing that's now going to go and change their life. If it's, you know, if you do manage to, you know, pass a challenge, if you are getting consistent payouts, fantastic, you know, all power to you, that's fantastic. And there's nothing wrong with having a go either if you want to have a go. But don't bet your trading career on that. Build your own infrastructure. This was something I was taught years ago anyway, right? Build your own infrastructure, have your own capital you're trading, build up your own capital base as much as possible. And as long as you do that in the right way, no one can ever take that away from you. If you move countries, if you, you know, there's regulation change, whatever, your money is still your money. Nobody can take that away from you. Whereas if you're reliant on another place, the same as if you only had, I'm a popular investor on eToro, right? So I people can copy my trades. I manage their money indirectly through there, right?
Signals.
Signals. I'm a signals guy. But it's a case of like, you obviously get paid for doing that, right? And obviously the more money you have, you know, under management, effectively, the more you get paid. But if somebody was doing that, I would tell them the same thing. Don't rely on that being your only source of income. Be building your own portfolio and your own capital base at the same time. It's exactly the same message, no matter how you're doing it. So if you've got external things like that and ways that you can make money, brilliant. It's absolutely fantastic. Of course it is. But don't rely on that, if that makes sense.
We have had prop firms that have now changed the game in terms of we've got the no time limit firms, which I'm a massive advocate of because I feel like that is a lot more realistic to trading in general.
Absolutely.
The 30-day cap definitely is tough. You know, only recently I passed another 200K FTMO.
Nice.
And, you know, the 30-day period, it forces you.
Yes.
If the market's quiet and nothing's happening, and I only trade a couple of pairs, nothing's going on, I'm like... I've got 2 weeks. Like, yeah. I've got to find something, you know? And then as we know, the mindset you bring to trading is very important. And that can so easily take a hit because you try and find a cheeky trade or you try and find a new way to get in or you see a news event, you're like, right, news.
That's it.
Let's go.
It.
And then before you know it, you're crying in the bath with James Blunt on, red wine. Like, you've just lost your account.
You've been watching
me. I have. And, you know, you start to realize like that's not sustainable for long and it's obviously detrimental. What I love there is you touched on probabilities because I feel like that's a word that is thrown around willy-nilly, but people don't truly understand probabilities.
No.
I feel like they're coming into the game going, yeah, probabilities. And it's like, do you actually know what that means?
Yeah, you're actually working that out.
Yeah, because I feel like it's such a thing to go, yeah, probabilities. And like we say, we don't know the sequence of events, the wins and losses can come.
Mm-hmm.
And the most important thing, as you've alluded to already, is, you know, protecting that downside. And I think some people, you know, might trade without a stop and they'll go, oh, I'll close if it gets here. But then it gets there and they're like, I'll hold a little bit more.
Yeah.
And then before you know it, you're done. And the thing is with these firms, and if you are using a firm, they have strict rules. Now, some people will moan, I don't like the rules, right? And I get that. But if you want to use their money, you have to abide by their rules, right?
Absolutely.
That's how it goes. If you've got your own 100 grand in the bank and you're willing to trade it, then go and do it. But if you haven't, they're a great way, but you have to find a way to utilize
them,
right?
Right way.
You have 100%. To. And I think that's where no time limit's definitely better because it allows you that, well, I haven't got a time limit, so if it takes me 6 months... takes me 6 months.
Yeah.
Like, and I did one recently with Bespoke, and literally it took me just over 2 months to pass phase one, 8%. And some people are like, I got a bit of flat for it. Like, oh, you made 4% each month. I'm like, that's great.
That's
got
a
good
very
capital.
Good return, yeah.
But this is the problem. I feel like people are still in that mindset of let's flip my nan's 50 quid to a grand. And now they're trying to flip a prop firm to a million.
So they're trying to do the same thing. Yeah.
And it's something that obviously, as you've said, it's not realistic. So obviously, with you understanding all of that sort of stuff and obviously, you know, growing and scaling your capital, to the viewers at home, would you recommend, because I feel like this is something that's not touched on and I don't know enough about it, so it'd be great to get your insight. Have you looked into like investor capital and actually managing other people's money?
Mm-hmm.
And is there a way or something people should be doing to perhaps go down that route as well? Because I feel like it's a topic that's not discussed much.
Yeah, so obviously there's hurdles to get up through, right, and hurdles to jump over and stuff like that. So it's actually one of the things that we're sorting out at the moment. So the way that, to give a quick insight into kind of how we work, so our trading floor, we're partnered up with a broker, an FCA regulated broker called Variance. We're an AR of them, so an appointed representative. Basically, essentially means we're kind of under their umbrella, if you will, right?
Okay.
Now, there's all sorts of things that we're also looking to do to have our own independent authority, basically, to give financial advice and wealth management and things like this. So there's certain CISI qualifications that we have to do independently, which, you know, someone like myself, for example, on the floor is actually currently working through. So there's all sorts of, you know, there's ways of doing it, but it's not a quick overnight thing. So there's other avenues, like, for example, I said, you know, I essentially manage money on eToro as a popular investor on there. That's one way of doing it, copy trading. The prop firms, as you touched on, if you're going to do it, use like a no time limit prop firm because it means you're not forced to do something. You can actually trade properly. So that obviously helps. And then obviously if you wanted to go more professional, I guess you could say, then obviously you have to get the individual qualifications and there's certain rules and regs and stuff like that, especially here in the UK. You know, it might be different, obviously, if people are watching from abroad, but there's certain rules and regs that have to be abided by because, you know, you're managing somebody else's capital. That is the reality of the situation. So, you know, you have to understand everything that goes with that. And it's not just a case of, oh yeah, my journal tells me I make 2% a month on average, I should have some investors. There's a lot more that goes with it than that.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. It's just something that gets thrown about a lot. You know, some people are always curious. Whenever I've mentioned, you know, you can go investor route, it seems to get overlooked a little bit because obviously the prop firm, and I get the prop firm's a lower barrier to entry. You need a couple of hundred quid, probably no qualifications at all. You can just go for it, right?
Yeah.
Like anyone can do it. But it's just, it's another insight that, again, when you have the skill, it's so scalable in so many ways.
That's where the big money is as well, right? So if you then put it into perspective on a relative basis, yes, having a 100 grand, 200 grand account from a prop firm is great, but you could end up, if you go down a professional route, they're saying 10 years time, you've got a solid track record, you've got the qualifications, you have a private fund. If you're managing 100 mil, well, if you normally, if you went by even like a 1%, 10% kind of split, i.e. 1% management fee, you've made £1 million on January the 1st before you've even done anything. Then you've got a 10% split, for example, on any kind of profit. If you made 20% that year, you've made them 20 mil, you've made yourself another 2 mil, you've had a £3 million year. Yeah. Now all of a sudden, 100 grand, don't sound that sexy, does it, right?
Don't, yeah.
So it's also relative. There's different levels to it and things like that as well. And I think, look, at the same time, it also depends on what you want to do, because that isn't going to be a very good route for everyone, right? Because some people don't want that stress. They want the freedom element is more important to them as well. And it's something that I always try and balance. Mm-hmm. Yes, I want to obviously grow more on the professional side and do more. And we've got plans for the wealth management arm of the business and all this type of stuff. But then at the same time, I also want to make sure it doesn't become too overwhelming within my life. I still want to be able to go and do nice things, like silly little things. On Friday, like a couple of days time from where we're filming this, I'm going to play golf with my dad, right? I don't want to be able to go and do that on a Friday, because that's also more important, right? It's not just about making a ton of money. So I think each person has to work out the journey that's best for them. For some, it'll be prop. For some, it's just their own money. Some, it's going down the professional route. Work out what it is for you. Don't just listen just because this, you know, him or her has done this. It's not what you have to do. Find out the route that's, I think, best suited for you.
Yeah, I love that. It's a great message to spread. And I love the fact that you're still doing normal things with your life, like going and playing golf with your dad. Sometimes you'll go out for lunch with the missus or whatever it is. You're just living that normal life. And I think everybody comes into this, I want freedom.
Yes.
And then what, unfortunately, a lot of people do is they get so inundated with work, they don't have any freedom.
Yeah, they do the opposite. They end up sitting there looking at a chart for 12 hours a day.
And let's face it, that's boring.
Yeah, and it's also a lot longer than what you'd spend at a normal job.
Yeah.
So you've got less freedom, if anything.
When I came into it, when I first went like that full time, I was like, I'm a full time trader. Yeah, let's go. And then I realized how like that's not very glamorous.
No.
And you just sort of sat in a chair. I ended up developing posture problems. I put loads of weight on, and I was just sat there from 7 till 5 staring at EU like this. Like, oh, yeah. Be quiet, kids. There might be a trade. And the reality was, I was like, this isn't sustainable.
No.
And like,
but it's not our professional flaws work either. We don't sit there staring at charts all day or even, you know, looking at fundamentals and macro data. You know, this is why we have different services and different things that we do. We'll be working with clients or, you know, working with some of the juniors and training them on different bits and pieces. We don't sit there all day buying and selling euro dollar or trading stocks intraday or whatever. It's just not how it works. So I think there's a little bit of a misconception, a little bit of misunderstanding. And then I probably find, you know, you're not alone on that. I'd imagine a lot of people have done that. And I think this is why a lot of people also then struggle when they go full time and their performance tends to drop, because they then start thinking they should be active because they're around more.
Yeah.
I have this conversation with clients all the time that I want to be a full-time trader. Okay, why? You know, you've got to find out your why behind it more and what you want to do, because the odds are, even if you're an intraday trader, you might get up 5, 6 a.m., get yourself sorted, coffee, water, you know, whatever your morning routine is, get yourself at the charts, you know, do your bits and pieces, mark out, you know, what you're looking for. Understand what you're looking for. And if it is there, fantastic. You might take a position or you do whatever. If it's not, you then also remove yourself. Have a set routine and have a why and a reason for what you want to do elsewhere, not just I want to sit in front of a computer all day, as you found.
Yeah, I agree, because I say this to a lot of people now. And again, I can say it because I've had the experience of it, right? Yes. I've experienced it and I'm like, look, it's not actually what you think it is. And I think this like feeling of sitting there from sort of 7 to 5 and thinking I'm a full-time trader, it's that misconception, because a lot of us are programmed to get a normal job, work 9, 8, 10 hours a day. So when you're not trading actively, you feel almost guilty because you're not doing anything.
Mm.
And I noticed that. I was like, the missus would be like, oh, how'd you get on today? I'd be like, I didn't take any trades. And then my head would be like, you didn't go to work?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I'm like,
yeah. You didn't make any money. Ooh, yeah. You've kind of let them down.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I started to have this battle. And that was where I did a lot of mindset work and realized, like, this is an industry where you might have a week or two with nothing, and then boom, you'll make enough for the month, you're covered. Like, that's how it goes, right?
Yeah, that's the beauty of it. Or you might have a flat month. I see so many people struggle with that psychologically, or they're down 1 or 2%, right? Because obviously you don't make money every month, is that how it works? So let's say that person's then flat or down. Now all of a sudden they're sitting there putting pressure on themselves. They feel like they haven't made an income to now pay their bills or do these things, and then they start pushing and forcing it more the next month, thinking they've got to recoup the losses. And it can be a very difficult transition. And probably what I'd say, if there's anybody watching this that's thinking about that, let's say they've got decent capital pool, prop, their own money, whatever it is, maybe go part-time first, right? It might not be the job that you're in, might not allow it, but maybe just, you know, work part-time somewhere, something that you'd find interesting, right? And maybe make that transition slowly. And it might help a little bit more on the psychological side of things. If you kind of really dive in two-footed and really kind of struggle basically at the beginning, it could be very, very difficult for people to make that transition. Not necessarily the trading is any different, but it's this. And as we know, the psychological aspect of things is so, so important. So maybe that might be a smoother way of people doing it. I know the, you know, people want to obviously trade full-time as quickly as possible, but it might be well worth people doing it that way, making a slower transition. It's a marathon, not a sprint, right?
Yeah, I think that also touches on like delayed gratification as well, because a lot of people want to do something straight away and they're expecting a result immediately. And I was this person again, you know. I was like, when I got funded, I was like, oh, done. We're living.
Yeah.
And then it's like, when you get funded, you have to now get a payout every month. You have to actually make money. And like you say, I love the fact you touched on a flat month, because I've had this sometimes where I'm like, look, sometimes you're gonna have a break-even month, or you're gonna be down a few percent, mm-hmm. and that's real. And people are like, nah, you're just a bad trader. And I'm like, what? Obviously, with your experience, there would be flat months, right? In those stores.
It's gonna be losing years, yeah. Right? If the conditions are, whatever market you trade, right? Every single asset class has its ups and downs, drawdown periods, etc. I mean, if you look at something like bonds is supposed to be your safest place to put money. They was down, the average long-term bond was down more than the S&P last year. Right? It's supposed to be safer. So any asset class is going to have it. There is no one place you can hide where you don't have drawdowns and bad market conditions. It's just the nature of the game. So there are going to be times, and you know, when you trade long enough, you realize this, that you know, you're just going to have those bad patches. Look at the likes of someone like a Warren Buffett. I know it's an extreme example. The guy's worth like $120 billion. He's had losing years. You're telling me Warren's a crap investor? Like, come on, like, use a little bit of logic here, right? So, but again, I think this is the misconception that people have from the social media lifestyle thing. Social media would have you think that someone that trades and makes money, buys a new Rolex every week, a new Lambo every year, and goes flying to Dubai, you know, three times a month and never has a losing day. Like, it's just not the reality of it. And if somebody is trying to send that message to you, you probably want a little bit wary of them. You know, you want someone that's going to turn around to you and say, yes, you can have all these lovely things. The caveat is, you've got to work hard. It ain't going to come easy. You might still fail. And you're going to have, even if you are successful long terms, some ups and downs along the way. It's just the reality of it. Nothing comes free, and trading is exactly the same.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Like, the general consensus online is, oh, if you lose, you're bad. So someone will find someone else to learn from or go to.
Start, right? System hopping.
Yeah, the system hopping thing. And obviously, I wanted to touch on that a little bit as well. Obviously, your style of trading, has that changed drastically in terms of your technical side from when you first started to now? Did you find you kind of changed systems a lot, or did you kind of stick with one and just roll with it?
So yeah, over the years, my trading style has definitely developed a little bit. So in the early days, I was a little bit more short term. I had this probably common conception that if I'm trading short term, I'm taking more trades, well, I can make more money, right? It doesn't obviously work like that. You can make exactly the same results long term as somebody that holds longer term positions. But what I also found as well, being exposed on the professional side, the professional side of things is definitely transitioning a lot more. So 30, 40 years ago, large departments and a lot of their money would have been day trading. Now, yes, the volatility might still be there sometimes to do that, but you're competing with algorithms and stuff nowadays, which can make the short-term moves a lot more volatile and inconsistent. Now, that's not to say you can't make money day trading, by the way. I'm just saying it's a lot harder landscape than it was 30, 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. So what you're finding is a lot of these professionals, their time horizon is kind of shifting out a little bit, where you more have more of a human edge, basically. So somebody like myself, my typical holding period is normally 1 to 3 month time horizon, or a little bit longer, depending on obviously the opportunity. Yes, of course, if I can get in and out of something short term, of course I will do that, right? And I will take short term opportunities at times, but the bulk of my money is made that way. Now, obviously there is the other side of it as well, is as a smaller independent trader, you can be more nimble, right? If you imagine a $1 billion hedge fund, imagine they're like a big cruise liner, basically. It takes a lot longer to kind of turn and remove the positions because of the liquidity in the market. They've got to scale out over like a month or two. The nature of their game is obviously very different. If you've got John Smith with even a $200,000 account, they can be very nimble. They're not going to affect the market, right? So, you know, there's obviously pros and cons to both sides, but I've definitely transitioned a little bit. It just suits me a little bit better, right? You know, my style of trading requires very little day-to-day monitoring. Yes, I probably watch more than I would do if I was just at home, because obviously I'm on a trading floor, right? Yep. So I'm obviously keeping my finger on the pulse, and I'm talking to my clients about markets, and I'm putting research together for clients, things like this. But again, I think this ties in with find the style that works best for you. Traders don't just necessarily sit there trading all the time intraday, and they're at the same time not all long-term investors. You've got to find that kind of sweet spot for you. So I think my trading style has definitely developed over the years. It's changed as well, like I say, because of obviously what suits me better and my personality and schedule, which may not be the same for everybody else. For some people's personality, holding positions long-term might be too stressful. Mm. They might prefer to be in and out short-term, and that's fine. But then also understand and know that's the nature of what you're doing, but don't then force yourself to trade all the time. You've got to find that happy medium, basically.
How did you find the importance of mindset that you bring to trading? Because obviously, we're not all born a natural born trader. We're not like, you know, Wagwan, I'm going to be a trader, that's it. Right? We usually, you know, it's something we get into and develop. And I feel like mindset is always briefly grazed across. It's not kind of touched on enough. How have you found across your journey and across your development, how much has mindset actually played a part in your success?
Yeah. I think it was definitely made easier for me because let's say, obviously, especially in the earlier days, I had smaller accounts, right? Mm. Instead of losing trade, I lost 100 quid. Now, when, especially in the early days, as humans, we have this emotional attachment to money anyway. So losing 100 quid, especially in the early days, you don't have much, whatever, it feels like a hit. But then because I was around people that are managing multi-million pound portfolios, and if they ever lose in trade, it might cost them £250,000. My 100 pound doesn't really seem like much now, right? So obviously I'm in that environment, I'm like, yeah, that means that 100 quid means nothing, right? Yeah, we move on. So obviously that helped. And I think the way that I am anyway, I'm quite unemotional with stuff like that. Like, I could have trade of the century, made a shit ton of money, or I could have just hemorrhaged cash, and I could sit here and have a conversation with you, and you wouldn't know either way, right? I'm very much kind of wired about that a little bit anyway. So I think my personality helps, having the exposure to being around people that are dealing with much larger sums of money than obviously I was. That then helped because it obviously kind of put it in perspective a little bit. So I think I'm kind of quite fortunate in that sense. There are obviously more, I think there's more awareness of it nowadays in terms of the psychology aspects. I also as well, and this might annoy some people, I think there's also a lot of BS around psychology of this thing of, oh yeah, it's 80, 90% psychology. No, it's not. If you can't trade, you can't fucking trade. Like, that's just the reality of it. You could be a Zen-like individual. You can't make money still. So you can read trading in the zone all you want. It ain't going to make you a profitable trader. Having said that, if you don't have the psychology in place and the emotional control, you're also not going to make money. So it does go both ways. So I normally explain it to people as like, there's kind of three pillars, if you will, right? You have your process, so your idea generation, your technicals, your fundamentals, macro, whatever it is, how you develop a trade and manage a trade. Then you have the risk management aspect. Risk management is also very two-part as well. You have your preventative risk management at the beginning, i.e. this is the capital that I'm going to have exposed at the beginning of this position. But then you have also the management side of it, where as the trade develops, that risk dynamic can change as well, right? There might be now a certain event that goes on, the trade's a certain amount in profit, your risk to reward changes and stuff throughout. So risk isn't one dynamic, but that's then obviously one of your pillars. And then the third one is your psychology and emotional side of things as well. For me, I think they're all equally important, right? So some people may struggle more or less with certain components, and obviously that's where their focus needs to be because they need to work on their weaknesses. But I think you need to be careful thinking that one of them, whether that be psychology, the technicals, whatever it is, that isn't like your golden ticket to making money either, right? So if you're somebody that isn't a consistent trader, if you're losing money, don't think, oh, I know what I need to do. I need to read trading in the zone again, right? That's not going to suddenly magically, no, it might be your problem, right? And that might obviously help, but it isn't like going to be the magic key that suddenly makes you problem. You've got to also look through your stats, look at your edge, look through your journal, look back test, forward test, all this kind of stuff and say, right, is there actually a flaw in what I'm doing and my approach isn't actually statistically going to pay me over the long term? I think you have to be careful with, I think it's a real kind of fine balancing act when people start talking about psychology, if I'm honest.
Yeah, it's an interesting take that, and it's one to dig into for sure. I think I can attest to the fact that, you know, I don't know many people that have read trading in the zone and been successful. Like, yeah. I don't.
But it's pushed on you, right?
Yeah, for sure. It's the one thing. It's like, go read trading in the zone, you'll fix all your problems. And I agree. I think it's a load of shit because trading in the zone certainly never, some of the things that are said are great, but it didn't truly fix. And I think that's where, for me, if you have a true psychological issue or you're, let's say you've got a system, right? Your edge is proven, your edge works 100%. You've got an edge, you've got data, which again is a simulated environment, but you've got data, you know the system works. You've got good risk management, but you are constantly doing stupid shit in the market. You're sabotaging, you're over risking, you're re-hitting the button, just buying and selling, your emotional composure is not there, that's when I feel like you've got to go, right, I need to work my mindset, and it's not trading in the zone. Mm. For me, I went through this battle myself where I couldn't really scale my capital, and I had an edge, I had a system, I had the data on it, I had risk management, but I would always find myself jumping into a news trade, or yeah. I would over risk, or I would hesitate, or I would revenge trade. I would do a mixture of things. And that was when I really went down that route of digging into actual psychology properly. Mm. And I actually found like a course that works on rewiring your mind, but it's not one of this like woo woo, let's rewire your mind and understand like neuroscience. It was just the reality of like your actual self-image and your identity that you hold and what you perceive to be a trader, and learning like you can't get rid of emotions because they're biologically wired into us, but you can learn how to identify when they're perhaps governing you or taking control. And I think the self-awareness that it gave me, it generally changed a lot for me, but it also allowed me to dig into my edge to realize that, because this will make you laugh, I used to trade like the 5 second time frame sometimes and like the 1 minute
right, okay.
with like one and two pip stops.
Yeah.
And on small money, it was cool. You know, the slip wasn't that bad, smaller lots. And then as I started to do it on my 140K account, it very quickly was like, oh, okay, it's getting a bit tough and whatnot. And digging into that and realizing that I want to scale because the opportunity in front of us is huge. This isn't scalable.
Yes.
Again, that was something I got from doing Rewired, but it was realizing that the general consensus of go and read a book. People always say this to me, what book should I read? What podcast should I listen to? And I'm like, I'll be real with you. I'm yet to come across one that's generally changed this. Yeah. Like I've had to do inner work and actually work on me. Because like you say, everyone's different, right?
But you also touched on a good point though, when you were talking about like your start over risking or whatever. I think this is the other thing that people seem to forget. They're not all individual things. They all overlap, right? Because if you're over-risking, that's something that you struggled with in the past, for example, that then affects your psychology. If your psychology isn't right, you might not execute your edge, right? So they all overlap with each other. And I think this is, again, something else that people then make a mistake of. They isolate these things as individual things to work on, but this could be causing this. Do you know what I mean? So it's like you've got to keep that in mind as well. And this is why you've got to be keeping everything in mind when you're focusing on yourself and working on yourself, that you won't just have one isolated problem. This might be an extension of something else that's going on or causing a knock-on effect into something else. So by fixing this, you actually stop another problem as well. They all overlap. And I think this is why you have to track everything in your trading.
That kind of can lead us into journaling and stuff. I would assume still to this day, you still journal everything. You still keep track of what you're doing, right, on a regular basis.
Yeah, to a certain extent, I definitely do. Don't get me wrong, I don't do it in as much detail as I used to. But it kind of goes hand in hand anyway with the way that I track my portfolios and performance and stuff like that, that almost becomes like a journal anyway. We're always kind of working on our edge. And, you know, I'm a big fan of Ray Dalio, for example. And, you know, I've looked at a lot of his work and studied a lot of his interviews and, you know, read his books and all this kind of stuff. And something that always stands out to me and something he talks about is just because something hasn't happened to you in your lifetime doesn't mean it hasn't happened before, right? So there'll be scenarios that come up that you think you know how to deal with that, you know, reality is the market doesn't react to how you think. And you go, right, okay, well, why is that? Where have I got a flaw here? And this is where then tracking your journal, understanding how you deal with certain scenarios, because if there is something new that comes up, you need to now make a note of that, go, okay, well, when this happened, this actually is a possibility as well, right? Obviously, going to vary depending on the asset classes you're trading and stuff. But I think that's very important why you should, even once you have an edge and you're profitable, even if you don't to the same degree as you did before, right? Because obviously you're not as much in the learning stage. You still need to keep a tabs on things because like I say, certain scenarios might come up. You know, I've been trading for 12 years, but I have, you know, I started trading after 2008, for example, and, you know, take out the little COVID blip that we had. We haven't had a major market crash really outside of that. So even though I've been in the market 12 years, I haven't had an experience like the financial crisis in 2008. So inevitably something like that will come up, which whilst I think I know how to deal with that, and you know, I know how I would like to manage my portfolio in that scenario, there will still be inevitably certain things that are presented to me that I haven't had to deal with before as a trader and as a person that I'm now going to have to adapt to. So then I will then learn from that scenario again. So I think you're always learning. You know, I listened to the podcast that you did with Mads, for example, and she was talking about being in the market for 8 years and still learning. It's very good that people have that attitude because it's naive if you suddenly sit there and think, oh, I've been doing this for years, I now know everything. Because scenarios are going to come up that you haven't experienced and you need to learn how to deal with that, identify it, but then also track it for future reference as well.
The market will smoke you as soon as you get complacent. If you think you've got one up on the market, it's coming in full on a vengeance.
It's the great equalizer of the market. It doesn't care who you are, where you're from, what you look like, what your background is, rich, poor, whatever. Doesn't care. If you do stuff you're not supposed to, it will take your money, not a problem. Because it will take your money sometimes when you do what you're meant to anyway. Right? The market is a cruel mistress. It will take your money. It does not care. So, you know, you've got to be on the ball. It's not something you can half-ass and go make money. As we said earlier on, yes, you know, you can have all these wonderful things. It can make you lots of money. You can buy these nice materialistic things if that's what you want to do. But what goes hand in hand with that, you've got to put the work in. You've got to keep on top of it. Your learning stage, you know, the implementation stage, the learning going forward as well. You know, you can't half-ass the market. You can get all these great things out of it, but you've got, you know, you've got to have some skin in the game. It's going to take its pound of flesh as well sometimes.
You're based in Mayfair, right?
Yes.
What kind of things do you guys offer over there? What are you sort of doing? What's like your standard day look like?
Yeah, the day-to-day of the office, we provide a variety of services. So it'll be everything from, you know, you've got a high net worth client that just purely wants execution, research, things like that. And, you know, they don't have to be high net worth to obviously have that service. But in terms of somebody that just wants execution, research, and a bit of support, because they've got an approach that they, you know, they're happy with. But then we also have, you know, John Smith, brand new trader, never traded before. We have education for them, online courses, private communities, webinars, things like this. So we do provide a real range of services because, you know, being in the retail sector as well as the professional sector, we have clients coming from all different backgrounds and different levels of experience. So our thing is to be able to facilitate whatever the client needs. If it's just execution and they just want to, you know, be able to, you know, buy and sell euro dollar, we can facilitate that. If it's somebody that needs some mentoring, support, things like this, then we can also do that as well. So we do provide a whole range of services. And, you know, I think for me, it also keeps me sharp as well. Mentoring other people is definitely something I enjoy. Something I appreciate as well, because if I'd have never had people take the time to mentor me in the past, I wouldn't be, you know, where I am today. So I always think there's this silly thing when people are like, oh, you know, why do you mentor people? It's like, well, firstly, it's an additional source of income. I'm leveraging my skill set the same as anyone does in any industry. But it's also good for me. It keeps me sharp. When I'm going through other people's journals, when I'm, you know, we're back testing certain setups or certain data sets and things like that. I'll always remember a lot of people will be familiar with Tom Danty, for example, right? He's obviously quite big on Twitter. I really like, you know, kind of his approach to things. And I always remember him saying that, you know, the swing failure pattern that he trades quite a lot now, he only found that when they was testing, he was testing with a mentoring student, a breakout strategy they was looking at. And they was looking at certain attributes that led to something being successful or failing or whatever. And so it kind of, they found a pattern by looking for something else. So for me, it keeps me sharp as well by looking at their portfolios and kind of helps me with my own personal trading. So from a selfish aspect, I definitely benefit from it. And I do genuinely enjoy it as well. So it's nice to be in that environment. And it also takes me away from sometimes the stressful things on the more professional side. It gives me a good balance.
No, I love that. I think it's good. Like you said again earlier, we touched on, you know, filling your time, having other things to do, other sources of income, and obviously keeping yourself sharp. I think it's really important to have. I'd have to come down and check it out, see what it's all like.
100%, mate. More than welcome.
Interesting to have a look. Yeah. Willing to share. I don't want to encroach too much on obviously what you guys teach online, but have you got any kind of risk management advice for people, especially when they're in this kind of prop firm game where you do have targets? Is there any way you would, if you were doing it, you would approach it? Would you say like risk 1% until a certain amount and then go risk off approach if you were into drawdown? Is there anything you could give, kind of shed some light for people that are kind of struggling with that drawdown risk management kind of period?
I think risk management is one of those things. It's definitely personal. So firstly, you've got to be risking a level of capital that you are personally comfortable with. If that's 0.25% or 1.5% or anywhere in between, whatever you want to do, there is obviously that to take into consideration. You know, not being too prop specific, if you're trading multi-asset classes and things like that, work out the balance there and the volatility weighting that you give to things. I don't want to get too complicated here, but different asset classes move in different ways. So to keep things simple, if you add 50% of your portfolio stocks, 50% bonds, it's not actually 50-50 because stocks move around about 1.5-2 times more than bonds do. So the weighting aspect offsets it. So that can obviously come into play as well. So that obviously comes into, you know, having a level of risk that you're comfortable with. But then I think a big thing is being consistent with that. It's Sod's law, right? If you go and place a bunch of trades at 0.5% risk, they're the ones that are going to all be absolutely fire and go and make you a ton of cash, right? Then you increase it to 1%. That's when you're going to take a bunch of losses. If you play around with your risk on a per trade basis too much, you're going to get inconsistency within your edge, right? We talked about edge earlier on and things like that. If you know you have a statistical edge, you should then be controlling your risk management based around that. You know, if you've got a higher win rate, for example, you can probably risk more per trade because statistically speaking, you're going to have more winners pop up. You're going to have your losing streaks are likely to be smaller. If you're someone that has a higher risk to reward on each trade, but then a small win rate, you've got to factor that in because you're more likely to have losing streaks. So it's very much independent to each person. I think understand your statistics before you start going into these types of things to then understand how the risk profile suits your strategy, but then also suits you, and then make sure you're consistent with it. And as long as you are, it makes it then a lot easier, if needs be, to make refinements down the line. If you, you know, find new statistics that come up and ways that you need to tweak things. But definitely got to be consistent. You've definitely got to find an approach that suits your strategy and you personally.
Is there anything you can pinpoint specific that you would go back and do different, or would you keep it the same?
I'd probably keep it the same, because although I've had some ups and downs and bits and pieces along the way, it's also led to me being where I am now, without sounding too cliche and cheesy, right? If I was to be, let's imagine I was, you know, kind of back to the start now, what would I do? The first thing I would definitely do is go and find a mentor. If I hadn't worked in those places, you know, and been exposed to that on a personal level, you know, I would have had to have gone and found a mentor individually, right? So it's the same with anything you do, any industry, any skill set. If you wanted to be a very good golfer, you would go and see a professional golfer. You wouldn't speak to the guy online that just hits a few trick shots and says he can play well. You'd go and speak to the PGA qualified professional that's qualified to teach you, right? So I would definitely be making sure I seek a mentor, but then also not rush. I think, look, trading and investing, yes, it can have all these great upsides in terms of, you know, making money and having nice things, but it's not a sprint, right? You've got to, and if you try and do it quickly, ironically, what will happen is it will take you longer because you'll keep blowing up accounts and doing stupid stuff. So I think as long as you do that, take your time, find a mentor, and just take it at a pace that's comfortable for you and know why you're doing it. We spoke about briefly earlier on, you know, understanding your why. I think that's very, very important to have. And as long as you do that, then, you know, the journey should be a lot smoother than maybe mine has and some other people's has as well. But do that, take your time, get a mentor, and just take it at a pace that's comfortable for you. And that would be the big focus of myself, I think, if I was to have to start over again, get a mentor, try and block out the noise, and make sure I take my own path, not everybody else's, basically.
I love that. And the emphasis on the why is incredible, because I think so many people are focused on the how and not actually the why they're doing it in the first place. And like you say, you've also got to kind of like enjoy what you do, because it's all well and good chasing money, but if you don't enjoy it, you're not going to stick it out for long term. And then the likelihood is you give up and you just kind of loitering around. So I think getting deep on your why, understanding it. I look at my why every day. I'm very aware of the reasons I get up and do this sort of stuff.
Yes.
So yeah, no, I appreciate that. I just want to say a massive thank you for coming on.
It's been a pleasure, mate. Thanks for having me.
I'm going to put Ben's links in the description. So he'll have his Instagram, Twitter. Go and follow him. He drops a lot of value on his Instagram and Twitter. Very underrated in my opinion. So go and check him out. And yeah, hopefully I can come and see the office soon, mate.
Absolutely, mate. Welcome anytime.
Nice one. Cheers. Thank you. Peace and love, gang. Catch you in a bit.